Hampshire last week because we did not have, well, we had Labor Day. So anyway, we're back 2 weeks after the first show. Three more matches in the books as the Shockers come home from San Luis Obispo. The Cal Poly tournament went 1-2 there. But even in a loss to Cal Poly, Coach, the last two matches of that tournament, certainly your best performances of the year so far.
Yeah, well, let's not forget the fight I thought we got involved in with Hofstra and came out on top. And I said to the team, you know, a year ago, I don't know that you could say we beat a better team. But on that weekend, given the fact that we're so young and new and they're not, I thought we beat a better team first weekend out. You know, as coaches, yeah, the wins and losses matter, especially if you're, you know, fighting for some, like, you know, at-large candidacy. You know, you get these tough teams on the schedule, you know, five gamers could go either way, and you feel like, you know, there's a chance there to get Cal Poly. But honestly, as coaches, we're just happy with the output. And we actually outscored. There's some crazy stats on that stat sheet, and it would indicate that we would win, but there's reasons why you don't. You know, serving was certainly a game changer in why we didn't. We missed our share, and they actually scored a lot from the service line, way above normal. But they're that team. They've got a special young lady on their team that puts up points and, you know, proved to be the difference. But, you know, I was thinking this yesterday, Mike. You know, if we played that tournament in reverse order, I'd tell you we're 2-1, if not 3-0. We learned some things leaving the San Jose State match. We got a couple injuries in that match. Put something else out there, and we think we found something. And, you know, North Texas is – I bet you they think that they lost to a worse team. I bet you they would tell you that. They had beaten Tulsa already this year, and Tulsa's picked ahead of us. Just little stuff like that, it kind of makes you wonder. But, yeah, nice performance from Friday night to Saturday afternoon.
And when I mentioned playing the best, and you mentioned the Hofstra win, certainly from the standpoint of competing and doing what you had to do on that given night, I don't want to diminish that, but from a pure volleyball standpoint, execution and so forth, would you say that you played better even in the Cal Poly loss than in the Hofstra win?
Yeah, because, I mean, the point scoring, I mean, for us to go, you know, well into the 300s against Cal Poly, and we outscored them and out – hitting percentage them and out dug them. And, you know, a lot of times you think of sort of, this is kind of silly to say, but there's sort of big girl skills and little girl skills in volleyball. Well, you know, we out big girled them, and they're right now a bit more of a big girl team than we are, meaning they're more physical. So the fact that we put up more power numbers, so to speak, than them, other than the service line, was quite an accomplishment, to be honest with you. And you've heard me say it this way just in our own casual conversations. I mean, when you're young and new, because there's, you know, we got a couple of new players that aren't young, but, you know, you expect inconsistency to sort of be there for a while, and you, with that, you expect sort of a low floor. But this team showed me on the weekend there's a pretty high ceiling if we can, you know, dial it up and you know, play well. So that's always fun.
Well, one thing we certainly have in common, we're both numbers guys, and I did some numbers on these last two matches.
Attaboy.
In the two matches with Cal Poly and North Texas, and again, let's reiterate, those are very good teams. Cal Poly's going to end up being a top 25 team probably at the very least. North Texas is probably going to win 20 or more, could win their league, and going to be very good. Over 14 kills, hit 311.
Right.
Your kill percentage was 40%.
Unbelievable.
Your error percentage was 9%. And if you take out blocks, actual balls just hitting the net or out of bounds, 5% errors.
Right. You would never expect to see that out of a young team. I think we put up an 11 or 12% errors last weekend against maybe Hofstra. I think that was the big win, reason why we won. Super pumped about sort of our ability to play kind of old when I know we're not. Certainly don't want to, you know, be the team with all the errors, of course. And but, you know, we haven't really even got our middles as involved, and that will drive kill percentage up. Emma Wright finally on the scoreboard, and, I, you know, her name goes to it, but it's really not Emma. I mean, Emma could do well for herself to, you know, maybe take slightly more physical approaches more often, but, you know, I just believe that the setting position is kind of costing our ability to be as good in the middle as I think we can be. And just you know, little coaches' anecdotal stuff, but – you know, I think if we played San Jose State and we switched setters and switched liberos, I think we would win in three in that match. Their setters and liberos were the reasons they won in that match. Usually you sort of think of those things a little more as a constant. It's about what pin players can do and whether or not a team can be busy in the middle or not. But you know what? It's not. And because the hitters carry so much of the load for blame so often, because hitting moves the scoreboard and hitting errors is a reason why you lose, and not getting kills is a reason why you lose. But you know what? Right now I refuse to put it on the shoulders of our attackers. I think they're doing a fabulous job. We got to improve on the wings, and so the wings is, we're talking defense, and we're talking setters at right back, and currently liberos are littles at left back, and that's where the void is right now. And Georgia's not coming back, so you know, just we all got to just suck it up and try to get better.
On the other side of the net, your opponents averaged two less kills, just over 12%, hit .206 in the two matches, 44% dig ratio on their attempts.
Look at you. That's advanced stats,
and,
Mike.
And over 2.2 blocks per set. So, I mean, even some of those numbers with the work you just mentioned that there is to do, certainly a major step forward.
Yes, and I do believe that we will get more continuity with our setting and our attacking. I do believe that sooner or later, one of the three littles that are, you know, battling for the libero jersey will rise to the top. Kara has the experience, and Kara has the edge on passing. Both Lily and Ariana are just going to outrange her defensively. And Ariana and Kara are the two better servers of the group. And then an underrated skill, we call it table topping, but bump setting. When setters dig, especially in a 6-2, you know, the libero to be able to come in and control that. And Georgia is one of the best I've ever seen. Kara definitely leads in that. In fact, when Kara wasn't in there, I was asking Cena to try to be the one to go get that ball. And that does put you out of sorts, but it shows you that the two freshmen have a long way to go in that skill. And that's a very, very, very important skill.
Yeah, that's something that we haven't really talked much about for a long time, just in discussions and so forth. But on your best teams, that's certainly been a strength, and not only the libero, but even all of your other players. And I know that one of the things that really concerned you after the San Jose State match was that your numbers were still pretty good when you had a good pass and so forth. When you were out of system and scrambling, the numbers were, by your term, terrible compared to
correct. And so let's break that down, because less than perfect pass, San Jose State setters could range with their feet and range with their hands. So now they're making a more hittable ball available, and then so many scramble balls get attacked cross court because there's double blocks standing in front of it. So now you're talking about setters and liberos digging that. So it just, there it is. And obviously in volleyball, when you're talking about a position, you're talking about people. So, you know, it's hard to swallow, but, you know, it is what it is, and we've got to start to back down from more in-system practices. We've been trying to find what balls each kid could hit and which balls our setters could set consistently. But, you know, here we are going into week three, and it's time for us to get to spend more time on defense, which has been neglected up to this point, and more time with scramble attacking and scramble defense.
I mentioned the 44% digs in the two matches, the last two matches there, and you've talked about where it still needs to get a lot better with the liberos and the littles, but one of the positives of that number is that two of your freshman outside hitters have been exceptional digging the ball.
Right. So when you're talking about 44% digs, you're talking about for us?
Total percentage of their attempts.
Yeah, right. So what you want to do, I'll give you a little trick here. You want to subtract their errors first, because okay. then it will help tell you with what was made available for us to dig.
So, and what kind of number are you looking for there?
Yeah, 54 is a nice – where we're at, 54% would be sort of a goal. If using the Missouri Valley as a standard, Northern Iowa in 2009, we always had the title when I kind of was able to steal it from them up until 2008. And in 2009, Northern, you can tell in their own recruiting, they were just going after smaller, more defensive-minded setters, liberos, and at least one outside hitter, and they were consistently over that 54, and you know they would put seasons together at you know, 57, when the next closest would be maybe us or Missouri State at 54, and you're like, well, that's just three. Well, that 3% is a gap, and it's hard to get to, and you're talking averages. So, you know, if they're at 57, there's sometimes when they're at 65 and things like that. So, but when you said 44 earlier, I'm like, no, people aren't digging us at a very high rate, so our firepower is there. But, yeah, no, percentage digs as a team has been good because Cena and Nicole have been doing a really nice job digging some heat at middle back and ranging at middle back. So two young freshmen there have been contributors on the back row.
And I would ask you, just in general terms, how unusual is that to have a couple of freshmen who you can play six rotations and are that good in the back row?
Well, part of it's because they've, you know, beat out who we had. Usually you feel like one of those might be a new player. But these two both came in the door. And I'll tell you what, we've got another kid, young lady coming next year that she excels back there. It's going to get real competitive. But 2 years ago in the Final Four, Mike, if you were to say, what did Nebraska, the ultimate champion that year, what did they have that nobody else had amongst the Final Four teams or even the Elite Eight teams? You'd have to say that they're two six-row kids. They're two passing, defending, outside hitters. We're clearly the most volleyball savvy, well put together of all of them. So they kind of volleyballed their way to the final. You know, and that's sort of what I see right now with the way recruiting's gone for us. I mean, sometimes you're just taking what you can get. But right now what we've got is a couple of players and a couple more coming that, you know, their strength is sort of their well-rounded volleyball-ness. You know, and what I'll tell you about Cena and Nicole, a week ago, I felt that they sort of looked like an invited guest on our team, sort of in just how their behavior. This weekend, I could tell it's their team. They didn't wait too long to feel like they can go ahead and hit that ball as hard as they want when they want, because it's their team now. They're not worried about what anybody thinks. And, man, the sooner you can get to that, the better.
And something else that's also very important, and I know in recruiting you try to get a sense of this, but you can't always tell. But in those, even after the match with Cal Poly that you lost, you made the comment right afterward, those two, Cena and Nicole and Megan Tafflinger, were warriors, which is kind of an ultimate compliment from you.
Well, you know, an old friend, someone you know, Scott Luster at Bradley, love the old guy. I mean, I'll forget him saying, you know, you should be able to ask any girl on your team who the warrior is on the team, and if they don't name themselves, you'd ask them why. I'll never forget the old man told me that. Right, it's you certainly need to be able to look in the mirror and say, I'm the warrior on this team. And you know, I saw some fight and I saw some chippiness going on, you know, between the net a little bit. It's kind of fun, and you know, barking at the ref a little bit. It kind of mattered, you know. And then, you know, this weekend, I don't know if you remember us being down 5-0 to start the Cal Poly match, but I had to have my first, you know, speech of that kind. And, hey, right after that, all we did was play better. So, you know, you don't want to have to roll that stuff out, but at least they responded to it. They woke up and got tough and went out and fought.
And in addition to that, and I will even single Cena out in particular in this case, a willingness to take big swings, not afraid to really go after it on a key point. And I thought Cena really had some key plays, sometimes not even a big swing, but just reading something and maybe two-hand dumping a ball in somewhere that got you a big point.
Well, it's probably easy for even the lay fan to see if someone gives up with their arm. But as coaches, we can tell you when they give up with their feet. They don't even aggressively go at it. And, you know, I'm constantly reminding our hitters that they didn't go for it with their feet, and then they did with their arm, or you know, or didn't with their arm. But Cena will find herself, you know, being aggressive to just about any ball we put up there, and then you put yourself in a position to make, you know, smart decisions with your arm. You know, we're not there yet with everybody else on our team who sees something less than perfect and backs off. And you know, it costs you points. You need to go at that thing as physical as you can, then evaluate once you get there. And a lot of people in women's volleyball, Division I volleyball, they're good on good sets, but they break down in a hurry on less than perfect sets. And Cena seems to be, you know, like I said about Mary Ashton Floyd, Sarah Eunice, Emily Stockman, you know, they were very, very good at finding their way to you know, less than perfect, whether it's high, low, tight, deep, they would at least approach to it like, I got this, and then they would make later decisions on whether or not it was time to pull the trigger. So you're absolutely right about Sina there. She'll find her way there, and she'll usually be in a position to score if things are right.
We will continue our discussion with Shocker Head Volleyball Coach Chris Lamb on our weekly show from AJ's Sports School at the Alley, but first, listen to this.
Sports Radio KFH, 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
You're listening to the Chris Lamb Show with Mike Kennedy live at AJ Sports Bar and Grill at the Alley on the corner of 13th and Greenwich Road.
Welcome back to our Shocker Volleyball Show with Head Coach Chris Lamb from AJ Sports Grill at the Alley. The Shockers are home for the first time this week, and we will certainly get into that because it is a big-time tournament coming up this weekend, but continuing to discuss the first two weekends of the season and some of the things that developed over the past weekend. In the Cal Poly match, the Shocker pin players got 125 swings and hit 368. The middles on 31 attempts hit 194. That was a huge concern for you and a really big turnaround on Saturday against North Texas.
Right, and let's give some credit where credit is due. We made a setting switch. Cora came in. Cora has other things we're concerned about in terms of, you know, being the setter on the team. But when the pass is right and Cora is able to be standing underneath it, you know, she is more accurate and more consistent with our middles. And therefore, you saw their numbers go up because, you know, we have the talent in the middle to be consistently in the high threes, if not fours, and often a few times. Don't be surprised if Chinello's not in the fives and Emma Wright might squeak in there once in a while. Abby Lehman's not on the team right now, so I'm not saying, you know, hey, everybody, let's expect 500 every night. But, look, it shouldn't be 100. That's backwards. And it's backwards because of setting. And we just, you know, what are you going to do? You got to work on it. But you only got four middles in the program, so you can't kill them every day and take 500 swings a day. It's just lots of video and lots of feedback and them being big brained and, you know, listen to what's going on here. But we gave away, because it's easy to say, you brought up the Cal Poly match. What are you complaining for, coach? You hit 300. Well, let's talk about the ones we gave away. I mean, what about that error and that error and that error? Not literally an error, but from a setting standpoint, it's a critical mistake in a tightly contested match. That's why I say, you know, how did we lose that match? Serving, setting, and libero play. It's obvious, and it's just a different sound to it. You know, we've been exceptional at the setting position. We've had elite liberos here, and we've done so much damage in the middle. But, you know, can our pin players keep up with the big guys? That has been a classic, you know, situation for us and things that we're always trying to grind through. Well, this is a little bit different. It's setting, libero play, and perhaps – serving as a team. So, at least you know, and now we're going to go out and try to improve.
To put a number to that, Emma Wright in the Cal Poly match on Friday had 10 attempts with 2 kills and 2 errors. On Saturday against North Texas, 9 for 19 with no errors. And it was just a complete difference in where the ball, getting the ball on her hand, getting an opportunity to really put a good swing on something.
Right. And as I mentioned earlier, at the libero position, it's so you get a little of this or a little less of that with each of our liberos. The same can be said, you know, at the setting position. You know, Michaela is clearly the defender, the fastest. She locates long balls. I mean, Michaela is very pleasing to the eye. You see all the talent. But she's the least accurate of the three with the middles and has the most hiccups setting our lefts. Even though our lefts can salvage a little bit, there's a few head scratchers. You know, Cora, the least mobile of the group, the poorest defender of the group, and doesn't get to as many balls, but she has the best range with her hands, least range with her feet, but she can fix a few things with her hands and chuck it around. But can she make enough volleyball plays on the floor? That's that one. And then, you know, Casey's sort of the mixture of the two, but, you know, probably clearly the least experienced, the youngest of the group, you know, and sort of at times the game appears to be a little too fast, you know, and we sort of have to, you know, simplify things a lot, but there's just things we want to do to score points, and we're trying to create some stuff, and she's going to have to, you know, be a quick study and figure that stuff out. There's a lot going on there.
And in talking about this team going forward and talking about that particular thing, setting the middles and the ability to attack in there, one of the encouraging things, at least in flashes, in the first weekend was Casey setting Demaje Johnson, your grad transfer from Indiana State. But Casey has, as you said, been a little overwhelmed, and she's going to get better. When Demaje turned her ankle in your first match in California after showing that she's really going to be a major factor, and you get both of them where they can be, that's going to be another big factor for you.
Well, and then, you know, Demaje's strength is just a good old-fashioned straight vertical up and down quick, and that's you know, the easiest thing in terms of locating for any young setter, because it's just up and down. Hope you get it high enough and keep it, you know, off the net the right depth, but you're not locating, you know, laterally, horizontally. So, you know, that pairing those two makes a lot of sense, because it's what Demaje is good at is what's simplest and easiest for Casey. And Demaje went out, and we got to run Emma right to gaps, and we've got to move her at angles along the net so she's harder to get in front of, because she's the least physical of the three in terms of, you know, being high, you know, physical advantage at the net. So, you know, for Emma Wright to be successful, we got to gash her here and there, and, you know, put some variety to it. And, you know, that's going to require a setter to have a little more in the quiver.
Now, the flip side of Demaje's injury, first of all, let's talk about that for a moment. Turned an ankle. Hers was a little more serious than Briley Kelly's. Briley looks like she could be back pretty soon.
And we expect her to practice tomorrow, yeah.
But I know that you're disappointed for Demaje, actually far more than what you lose from a player standpoint, just personally for her.
Yeah, well, you know, we're humans too, us coaches. And, you know, Demaje went to a program before coming here that didn't go after it, didn't go for it, you know, and she told me she's going to play, you know, more teams in one season here than she did 3 years, you know, at her previous school. She was just so excited that she was going to get to play Penn State, and, you know, I'm happy for her. And when she went down, hey, I got injured too at the beginning of the year, my sophomore year, and, you know, you're just bummed that you don't get a crack at, you know, that non-conference schedule. And you know, she got to go play Penn State. She wants to play Cal Poly. She wants to play Texas. And, you know, just a little fluke injury. And, you know, that may not happen for her. And it makes me sad, because, you know, I love what Demaje is all about. That girl doesn't make any excuses. She shows up. She listens. She works hard. She has not been bashful. She hasn't acted like a, like I said earlier, an uninvited guest. She just walked in and said, okay, this is my team. And, you know, you don't want to wait 3 months for someone to feel comfortable. She behaves like it's been her team all along since she got here. I have tons of respect for that, tons of respect for her. And, yeah, it was heartbreaking to see her. And Austin and I had to carry her off the floor. And, you know, in my mind, I'm going, you know, this is kind of a 3-4 week at best kind of deal before she's able to burst off that thing. You know, and you know, maybe a chance against Texas and BYU and Nebraska in, you know, in the Coliseum, may not be there for her. And I'm sorry, but it kind of hurts.
Flip side of that is Shanello Ogogor has more or less had to play more than she might have if Demaje had stayed healthy. And do you feel like she's shown something? First of all, people should know, she lettered 4 years in track and basketball in high school, just 2 in volleyball. She's new to the game, pretty raw, but a freak athlete. And did she show you some things over the weekend that maybe even surprised you a little?
Okay, so we were just waiting for her to be cleared. We were gonna throw her to the fire the day we got her cleared. So, you know, fortunate she was cleared before Demaje went down, or we would have had to unredshirt Brooke. And we're redshirting Brooke because it's what Brooke wants. It's what we always wanted for her, but 2 years in a row, because of injury, we weren't able to. So, you know, that nice that the stars lined up for us that way. But, you know, we've always seen her dominate practice. And we had 2 middles leave the program because they didn't think they'd ever going to play here again, partly because, you know, Chanella's redshirting and they can't beat her out. But the one thing is, she did not put up numbers last spring. So in the gym, she was great. But in competition, in all honesty, okay, where's the beef? You know, where's the numbers? But we know she's a part of the solution. We got to get her out there. We got to get her comfortable and let her learn. So you saw her find some points. And you know, a couple of those middles at Cal Poly have been around a while. And when she got the set she wanted, they couldn't stop her. When the set was good, she scored against some pretty good, you know, talent on the other side of the net. So future's bright for that young lady.
I think people would find this interesting, a little bit amusing. I was walking out of the gym with Emma Wright and Gio on Saturday after the North Texas match, and Gio's reading off the stat sheet, and Chanelo hit like 588 or something. And Emma said, anything she touches turns into a kill. I've just resigned myself to the fact I'm never going to be that player. But there are reasons for that, and this weekend we saw some signs that even when she doesn't get a great set, she's able to do some things with it.
Well, you know, advantage to people who are up higher. The windows are bigger, and there's just more room for error. As long as the setter can get it up in there, you know, there's just more space to – you know, and time to find something, and it is what it is. I mean, yeah, don't forget, these guys are all teammates, but these are competitive individuals, and they're fighting for their own, as they should. But listen, Emma can be the girl. If we can get the ball in her hand, she has pretty good awareness in transition. You saw some 5-1 stuff this weekend, and I saw her get lost as what we call an M1. She had opportunities to get behind sooner, retract differently as an M1 would. That she needs to improve there. But Emma, for not being the most, you know, elusive or quickest of foot of the middles, she moves efficiently in that little middle retraction triangle. You know, there's a kind of a little triangle that these middles operate within, and Emma will find a way to let herself create a powerful approach with eight feet. So she waits well, she gets herself gathered, and you know, can get off the floor in what we call fast or medium transition, which, you know, well, Chanelo's not even close to making those evaluations and sort of navigating through a busy, chaotic transition volleyball. So if we can get a setter to put it in front of Emma will do very well in our conference this year. She's very capable in the role we have for her to be right in it amongst middles in the American.
We will continue. Lots to talk about on our second Coaches Show of the Year, week 3 coming up for Shocker Volleyball, and we'll continue in a moment from AJ's.
Sports Radio KFH, 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
You're listening to The Chris Lamb Show with Mike Kennedy live at AJ's Sports Bar and Grill at the Alley on the corner of 13th and Greenwich Road.
And welcome back to The Chris Lamb Show as we continue to talk Shocker Volleyball. We will definitely we'll keep this segment a little short to spend some time with the upcoming Shocker Volleyball Classic this weekend at Coke Arena, the first home matches for the Shockers. But wanted to talk a little bit more about your outside hitters. Sophia Rowling, a young lady from little bitty Thayer, Kansas, which is like 400 and some people in southeast Kansas, who has a chance to be something special. She had an abdomen strain that kept her out for a little bit early. She saw a little bit of time at Penn State and certainly showed some growth this last weekend, especially after the first match. I know after the San Jose State match, you talked to her a little bit about, hey, cut it loose and swing a little bit.
Yeah, she's, you know, there's some things. I mean, finding your way to the ball as a blocker. There's lots of philosophies on, you know, what you should try to do. But when you've got a physical presence like Chanelo, Abby Lehman, you know, Sophia, it's not good enough just to sort of take space and steer hitters in a direction. You want her to go get it. You know, I want her at 1.4 blocks a game. I want to get her in front of people and go get it. And, you know, but there's just little things you got to be able to pick up, angles of approach, hitter tendencies. Can you set them up with something and steal it later? I mean, everybody plays the cat and mouse game. So really hoping to get her to be a quick study. And, you know, Austin and I got to figure out, you know, ways we can raise those stuff block totals. But, you know, the other thing is she's got a nice arm. She's a pretty good jumper for her size. You know, it'd be great if she was kind of a nightmare, a side-out nightmare for opponents as a, you know, high right side attacker with us doing stuff with quick hitters on the other half of the court, because it's easy to get those approaches for quick hitters. Quick hitters can get more availability farther to the left side of the court than they can to the right side of the court. So if you can have a right that can score on long balls, you can do some quick stuff on the other side. And it's just a simple – well, when we played USC in the Sweet 16, I mean, they were just so lucky to be able to play volleyball at its easiest with real physical talent in every spot. You know, Sophia gives you the ability to do that. Sam Sanders did that for us. Backus late in her career. Sarah Eunice for sure. We had just, you know, physical Sarah Lundgren, physical right side players that allowed us to make things a little bit easier and more frustrating for the opponent. So we're hoping to get her there sooner than later. And then just like I said with Chinello, when the rallies break down, when all of a sudden it goes from being, you know, a love story to a horror story, you know, how do you manage yourself in this chaotic version of volleyball that you know happens and, you know, half the rallies out there turn into, can you fix this? And can the end result be a powerful swing by your team? And, you know, getting them ready, identify it. Where can I get to? Can someone get them a ball? And then once they get it, can they get up and be powerful, you know, versus a prepared defense? And she's got all the tools in the world for it. She'll be great. But like I said with Chinello, hey, anything we can get accomplished this year, we won't have to worry about ever again. So we're hoping to get a lot under their belt.
And one other player I wanted to talk about that kind of plays off all these discussions we've had, Megan Taflinger had a very good redshirt freshman year last year. She was one of those players that, as a true freshman, there were times you questioned yourself whether you wanted to bring her off the redshirt because of how good she was in practice. Then she had an injury late in the year that kind of slowed her a little bit. But coming into this year, she was the player that other people knew about. And I felt like the first weekend at Penn State, definitely people were laying for her, concentrating on her. This weekend, with the way Nicole played and Sina played and Sophia to some degree and even getting the middles involved, she had more open net. She had more good swings, and we really saw what Megan Taflinger can be, especially against Cal Poly.
Yeah. Now, Megan wants to play fast. It seems like you can't get it flat enough to her, but that's also more pressure on the setters. So we're fighting this. We're trying to give her what she needs, but then the setters, you know, break down. I'll tell you what's been the biggest surprise for me and Megan has been just her comfort behind the setter. We got a couple side out rows rotations where, God, behind the setter, you would have thought, all right, how are we going to make this rotation work? Well, she's just been lights out back there with a couple different sets. And, you know, and then now with her serve, you know, every now and then, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, she had a terrible week of serving, and she's a pretty lethal server in practice, but she does miss at a high rate. Well, I don't know if it was Sean or Austin, but somebody said, well, let's get that arm doing a jump top like Sina does. And right off the bat, we found a toss for her that she likes, and, you know, she put some numbers up against Cal Poly, but then as she tired, it went away. And, you know, maybe one of our regrets is we didn't keep her on the ground late because I think she missed several in a row. But, you know, I took that jump topspin serve away from Emily Stockman because, A, she didn't really hit it hard enough, and, B, it's a physical thing. You got to practice this thing, you know, 20 times a day, but you're already taking 50 attacks a day. All of a sudden, you know, it catches up to you. So a little careful what you wish for on that, but it was nice to see that that option is there.
Yeah, and that's the last question I have from the weekend is you've mentioned the serving. 17 service errors in that Cal Poly match, a lot of them late, middle of the fourth set
right on
through the fifth.
And that was the key right there.
And, you know, was that – as regrettable as it is, was it also an important moment in terms of a little bit of a learning experience that mental fatigue can set in late in a grueling match like that, and that you've got to maintain that concentration on every single point?
Absolutely. I mean, it beginning to end, how long can you sustain your concentration and focus, competitive spirit, you know, scouting report, evolving scouting report, you know, adjustments. I mean, it is just – there's things happening, and you've got to stay with it. We had a young lady in the office today, just talking about the weekend. And you know, I said, look at the wall behind me. What do you see? She's looking at my whiteboard. A lot of numbers. I go, well, pick one. All right. She picks one. I go, okay, what is it? That's a four. All right. Do you see the very, very top corner of that four? You know, there's one little dot. It's like, yeah. I go, well, see, that's a lot more focused than just staring at the board. You know, I mean, you got to really zero in on this. I'm like, can you do that every single play? You know, and all the components within a play. Otherwise, you look back and go, oh, only if, and that's frustrating. But it's part of doing this.
Huge weekend ahead for Shocker Volleyball at home. We're going to talk about that when we come back on the Chris Lamb Shocker Volleyball Show.
KFH, 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
You're listening to the Chris Lamb Show with Mike Kennedy live at AJ's Sports Bar and Grill at the Alley on the corner of 13th and Greenwich Road.
Welcome back to the Chris Lamb Show. The latest American Volleyball Coaches Association poll out today. Stanford number one, Nebraska two, Texas three, Penn State four. What do they have in common? Oh, they're all on the Shocker schedule. Wichita State has played Penn State. They will face Texas this weekend, Nebraska next week up in Lincoln. And number 13 is BYU, which will also be in this weekend. So you have the number 13 and the number three team in the nation, two traditionally powerhouse teams. BYU was a Final Four team last year. So first of all, it has to be pretty gratifying that you were able to work with those people and not only play in BYU's tournament to get them to do it, but to get those teams to come here is pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, when you go to BYU, you don't forget Stanford was there, and Stanford had to want it too. I mean, there's just a lot of moving parts. A friend of mine was watching Texas last week and said, this is maybe the most physical team in Division I history. And he could be right. They lost to Stanford.
More physical than the Stanford team we saw last
year. Yeah, I mean, because they played Stanford last weekend, and they were the more physical of the group, and all Stanford did was get more physical than last year. So, you know, but hey, we just played Penn State. It's not like you go off to war and you come back in a body bag. We're still here. And, you know, from that, we got great experiences, and, you know, kids are pumped about it. I hope the Shocker fans, they better show up. Everybody better get there for this. But, you know, it's good for the RPI. It's good for the girls love it. We love it. And, you know, where can you point to a few things that you got out of it? That means everything to me. We had those conversations after Penn State. We're going to have those conversations after the Longhorns and after BYU. And we'll do it again after, you know, Creighton and in Nebraska. And I hope I'm never the coach that sort of robs my athletes the opportunity for that. In fact, I work for that. So it's not easy to pull this off, especially to get them to come to your place. But, you sort of got to shuffle the cards a little bit. There's some give and take in doing that. You know, we didn't have a home tournament last year. That was one of the sacrifices for being able to line this up. But, hey, Cal Poly will be here next year. Creighton will be here the year after. And Penn State will be here either next year or the year after. That's pretty cool. And because of that, somebody else will want to come too. So I think we're doing it right, Mike. Thanks for bringing that up.
And I want to say, and this is not a false promotion at all. 2 years ago, Wichita State hosted first and second round matches in the NCAA tournament. We had over 7,000 people for both those matches. There was not a team the caliber of BYU or Texas here in those first and second rounds. This is as good a caliber of volleyball as you're ever going to see in Wichita. And if you're just a volleyball fan, you really should get out and be part of this.
Yeah, well, I promise you there are a couple of Olympians and very, very high-paid future volleyball players coming here next weekend. If nothing else, you want your daughter to see what elite looks like. Well, my friend Jarrett's got him on his team. So come out and see what the Longhorns got and watch the Shockers have at it. And, you know, don't forget – you know, the one that really matters is that VCU game. They're like us. They're here just as excited to play those teams as we are. And, you know, hopefully we're geared up and ready to compete versus the VCU.
Little background, BYU is 5-1. They've hosted two tournaments so far, so they've played all six of their matches at home. They do have a loss to then number 16 Marquette. Marquette's now number 7 in the latest poll. That was a 3-1 match. But they returned four players from their Final Four team last year who were at least honorable mention All-America. They lost Ronnie Jones-Perry, who was just an incredible outside hitter.
One of the best. One of my favorite to watch.
And their center, but they've got a first-team All-American libero and Mary Lake, an outside hitter McKenna Miller, who was hurt late but still did enough to get honorable mention All-American, and two really exceptional middles. So they've just kind of reloaded and always are getting the best of the kids in that area.
No doubt. No, Penn State's great, and if they don't get that injury late in the year to that outside hitter, you know, you might have been looking at, you know, the first female head coach to win the championship. I mean, it was because they had beaten Stanford. We were there to watch
right,
it,
yeah.
And Stanford won it all. So you'll always have to wonder what could have been if Heather could have been the first female head coach to do it. But yeah, they're very, very, very good. I have them better than 13 in my brain. Just pumped that we're going to have at it. And again, let's go, fans, get out and watch this.
VCU is 4-3. They have defeated Lehigh, High Point, North Carolina State, and Alabama. Their losses are to Texas Tech, Ohio State, and UC Santa Barbara. All very good programs. They won the A-10 regular season title last year. They're picked second behind Dayton, the team that beat them in the tournament championship of their conference tournament last year. They've got an honorable mention All-American middle, who was fourth in the nation in blocks last year, Jasmine Sneed, two other second-team all-conference players. And that was a team that you did beat back there in Richmond last year in one of those battles early in the season.
Right, and it was a war, and the fourth game, I think we got beat 25-7 or something, and then we came back and had enough. And Georgia was exceptional in that game. And again, we won't have Georgia back, but yeah, their NC State win was something else. And they've got a lot of talent. And they're very good, and if they stay in that 6-2, they play it fast on the edges, and they got a lot of firepower. So it's a big weekend. Well, you knew the whole non-con was just loaded. You know, we made it very well known that we need to do as much learning as we can this non-con portion of the season. And it was this year, it hasn't been like this since 2003. Ever since 2004, you know, I've been sort of, the recipe was, you know, at-large candidacy, non-con, RPI. This year, we sort of, once Georgia went down, knowing we're going to start a bunch of young people, you know, the recipe is get the best teams you can on the schedule. Just compete, learn in the non-con, and then go out and attack this conference, make that conference tournament. Got to be top six to do it, and then get hot late. And, you know, that's how we're setting this thing up and, you know, moving forward. By the way, you know, we were picked 7th in the league. That would put you out of the tournament. You can only get 6, but, you know, North Texas beat Tulsa, who was picked 4, and we beat North Texas. It doesn't mean everything, but – you know, it shows you that, you know, maybe we're a little bit ahead of schedule, I think, and I'm cool with that.
Texas, most teams have played 6 matches to this point. Texas has played 4. They're 3-1. They did lose to top-ranked Stanford 3-2 this last weekend. They have beaten Northern Iowa, Southern Cal, and Minnesota, all top 25 caliber teams, NCAA tournament caliber teams. They returned 6 of 8 starters, regulars from a 23-5 team, including a second-team All-American, Micaiah White, honorable mention All-American setter, and All-Big 12 middle. 3 of their recruits, they recruited 3 freshman middles who were rated 1, 2, and 16 in the nation in volleyball, prepvolleyball.com's ranking. So this is a loaded, stacked Texas team.
I mean, there's a chance that a Shocker fan may see the most talented female athlete they may have ever seen when they see one of those young ladies. I mean, it's just she's just so long and jumps so high and has a, you know, really good. She's not the most skilled yet, but I'm telling you, this is an Olympian, and this is what they look like, and it's be fun to see.
Just to give you an idea of this kind of talent, when Wichita State prepared to play Texas in the regional at Austin, was it 2008?
Yeah. Yeah, Emily.
Destiny Hooker, at outside hitter, Coach Lamb had one of his assistants stand on this big box that he built and hit balls just to try to give his back row the perspective right. of the angle and force that they were going to be seeing.
Yeah, well, more of that, it's on its way.
But again, great opportunity for your young players to see the best of the best, see how they stack up. And one of the interesting things will be to see maybe how they've progressed since the Penn State match and how they handle themselves against this level of talent.
Well, I think all me, Austin, and Sean all agree that, you know, the defense is going to get some love this week in practice. And we certainly have learned a little bit more about our setting situation and how we can hopefully better use that for more swings. We call it swing percentage and heat percentage. We gotta give away less, and hopefully we can clean that up. But hey, it'll be a work in progress. But that's why we're doing this. I mean, I teach, man.
I'm hearing music. That means it's time to get out of here. If you're a volleyball fan, you better be there this weekend. Shocker Volleyball Classic, the Shockers and BYU Thursday at 7. Beginning the tournament, they'll play every night at 7 against VCU on Friday, Texas on Saturday. We will see you there. We'll be back here next Monday for the Chris Lamb Show at AJ's.